Welcome to the Senior Statesman of Virginia's first program in 2022 on January 12th. I'm Sue Friedman. This is my first meeting as president of the Senior Statesman of Virginia Board of Directors. I'm very pleased today to welcome two new board members, Ella Jordan and Bob Beard, both great community activists and supporters here in the Charlottesville region, and to bid adieu to two board members, Bob McGrath and Rich DeMong, who both provided great leadership and support for Senior Statesmen of Virginia during our 25th anniversary year and before. So again, welcome. We're so pleased to have you today for this very interesting and sure to be informative program on medical marijuana and adult use in Virginia. Absolutely all the details, or at least all the details and all the questions. So it's my pleasure to turn the program over to our new Vice President for Programs, Peyton Williams.
Thank you very much, Sue. It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker today. Niggas, baby, I've been working on that for 2 days, and I'm
so happy. You nailed it.
Good. Thank you. You're very, very kind. She's the Vice President of Public Policy at Columbia Care, one of the largest of the nation's, one of the nation's leading medical cannabis companies. She also serves as the president of the New York Medical Cannabis Industry Association, and is on the board of the District of Columbia Cannabis Trade Association. You realize both of that, those are ahead of Virginia in getting to the use of medical cannabis. Prior to that, she co-founded the Undaunted Ventures, which is a political consulting group, which specializes in innovative narrative training and leadership coaching services. And that grew out of her work in Virginia with a number of campaigns. She's also the co-founder and co-director emerita of New Leaders Councils Virginia, which is a leadership institute. She has a BA in public policy from the University of Chicago and a master's in public policy and management from the Carnegie Mellon University. She also happily gives and receives recommendations for sci-fi novels and board games. So I'm waiting to find out offline what your sci-fi novels are so I can pick one up for my wife, and the board games so I can pick that up for my son and grandsons.
Oh, we will definitely have to talk afterwards.
With that, please.
Well, thank you so much, Peyton, for that introduction. And Sue, thank you for that initial invitation to come speak to y'all. I also just want to shout out, I think I see Ellie Tucker in the attendees. And so, hi, Ellie, which has been a longtime follower of cannabis policy. So for today's approach, what I talked through with the organizers for today, I'm going to walk through the medical program because that exists and that's something for folks to participate in. And then I'll stop for some Q&A on the medical program, and then I'll switch over to adult use cannabis. And we'll talk a little bit about what that means holistically and also what are the open questions we have as the General Assembly session, which just started today at noon, is underway. And then the last thing, because I forgot to include this in my bio when I sent it over to Peyton, I also was appointed to the Cannabis Public Health Advisory Board here in Virginia, which helps oversee the health-related regulations that will be regulating all things cannabis. So very excited for all of the work we have ahead. But let me go ahead and dive right in on medical cannabis first. Virginia's medical program was passed around 2016, and the first licenses were awarded in at the very end of 2018. The first dispensaries opened in October 2020, and now we have multiple dispensaries in multiple HSAs or health service areas across the state. And so this program has been around, and it's specifically when it was first designed, and I think this is important to remember when we start talking about some other aspects of policy. But when the program was first designed, it was supposed to be a program to help children with pediatric epilepsy. access cannabinoids in a legal and safe fashion. It's since been expanded, like a lot of medical cannabis programs. And most importantly, in Virginia, one of the things we got right very early on is the concept of letting doctors decide. And so in order to become a medical cannabis patient, you have a slightly different process than if you were getting any regular prescription from your doctor. There are two steps that you have to do. First, you have to get what's called a certification. Because cannabis is still a federally illegal substance, your doctor can't write you a prescription. So what they do is write you a certification that affirms that you have a condition that qualifies for treatment with medical cannabis. And in Virginia, there is no limited list. Though I can tell you that the top three reasons we typically see across all states are pain management, anxiety or depression, and insomnia. So once you have identified a provider, and I'll share some links for how to find a provider and have that conversation, you'll get a paper certification that says this patient could benefit from treatment with medical cannabis. Once you have that, you have to go finish registration with the Board of Pharmacy. So you have to submit the paperwork to the board in order to finish registering. So we're going to walk through a little bit of those processes to kind of explain how you can do it, because it is a little bit different than most medicine. So again, any condition can qualify if you have talked to a medical provider and had them affirm that condition could benefit from treatment with cannabis. A lot of folks find that their medical providers, especially your primary care providers, will not write a cannabis certification because the providers have to register with the Board of Pharmacy. And unfortunately, at this point in time, a lot of our hospital institutions within the state have policies that limit medical providers from participating in the medical cannabis program. While we hope to see those policies change, I'll share a link through Virginia Normal, where I also sit on the board. Virginia Normal has an excellent link and roster of providers who will write certifications. And many folks find that their primary care providers are supportive of their use for cannabis, even if they themselves can't write the certification. We certainly always recommend talking about cannabis with all of your healthcare providers, because it is important that folks understand, this is still a medication and it can be interacting with other medication. And it's not always the right type of relief for all people. And so it's important that folks have that conversation with the medical professionals who are responsible for your care. Now, in order to finish, once you have your certification from your practitioner, you have to register with the Board of Pharmacy. I'll go through this very quickly. I know Ellie certainly is familiar with this process. I'm a patient myself, and so this can be a little bit cumbersome, but we do have some legislators who are hoping to streamline this process. So you have to go through the Board of Pharmacy website to create an account and then complete your initial registration. There are a few different, you have to kind of create the account, log back out, and log back in order to get complete the registration. And you click through to specifically select a pharmaceutical processing license and patient. For folks who have either minors or who might have mobility limitations, there are also options for a guardian. So somebody who is approved and registered and tied to the patient themselves to be able to go to the dispensary and pick up the product and medication for them. Final notes just on this is, once you have your card, where can you go? The state is divided up into five what are called health service areas. In the central, unfortunately, Charlottesville and HSA-1, that pharmaceutical processor license is tied up in litigation, so there is not a processor established and open to serve the Charlottesville area. However, other processors do provide delivery. G-Leaf does, and G-Leaf covers HSA-4 here in the central part of the state. Dharma or GTI cover HSA-3 in far southwest. HSA-2 is covered by Jushi and their Beyond Hello dispensaries. And HSA-5 is covered by my company, Columbia Care. When you walk into one of these facilities, after you have your card, and you do have to have your card issued to you by the Board of Pharmacy. And unfortunately, right now, there are a lot of delays because the Board of Pharmacy is literally reviewing applications manually, one by one, as they come in. They have created an electronic card option, so folks do not have to wait for cards to arrive in the mail in order to enter the dispensary for the first time, but they're still facing some of the delays in the actual review process, which we're hoping we can streamline soon. But in the meantime, when you walk into one of these facilities, you have the option to speak to a pharmacist, which is highly recommended, especially for the first visit, to help you select the product. Because unlike, again, traditional prescriptions where the doctor will determine exactly how much you should be taking, frankly, a lot of our doctors and medical professionals are very underinformed about what is in and what the options are for cannabis medication. The standard medical school curriculum still doesn't require education on the endocannabinoid system within our bodies. So there's a lot of catch up we have to do within the traditional medical service models. And so what has been how they've divided up this labor is you come in and you can talk to the pharmacist, and all of the pharmacists in our dispensaries are highly trained and to specifically cannabis science and the science of cannabinoids and how they might interact with any medications, but also how they might provide relief and what format options might provide you the most relief. So when you walk in, you show your card, you talk to a pharmacist, and then you can make your purchase and begin medicating. I'm going to head over here to some medical Q&A. And so I'll stop sharing for a little bit. I'm happy to tackle some of the questions that have been teed up in the Q&A box first. So one of the first questions we have is about with the new governor, do we anticipate any change in the medical program? I think regardless of governors, honestly, the medical cannabis has strong bipartisan support. The first stages of the medical cannabis program were passed by Republican-controlled legislatures. And we have always had very strong support for all the bills we've had to continue improving the medical program, no matter who was in charge politically. So I think we anticipate and hope for a number of changes. I heard Senator Marsden, who helped carry some of the original bills designing the medical program, is hoping to introduce a bill that would remove patient registration requirements with the Board of Pharmacy, which would dramatically increase access for folks because you wouldn't have to wait for that process in order to come make your first purchase of medicine. We also have a number from the pharmaceutical processor side. We have a bill with a number of operational improvements that we hope will help us reduce costs to patients and continue providing high quality medicine for everyone. There are about 40,000 medical patients that have been issued cards thus far. We suspect, and based off of projections from when this bill was originally passed, that there might be as many as 400,000 potential medical cannabis patients. However, we are not allowed to advertise. Unlike the CBD shops or people selling barely regulated Delta 8 products, we are not allowed to advertise. And so it is difficult to ensure that folks even know that there's a medical cannabis program in the state for them to access right now. Are there any other questions on the medical cannabis side of this?
There's a lot of deregulation, but I guess this is more properly a later in the talk. But with the deregulation, it's been more oriented towards decriminalization rather than allowing recreational use. And that is probably something you're going to cover later. So I apologize, but that was one of those thoughts.
I think you're exactly right. And I'm happy to dive into a little bit of that. I think we have had a lot of focus and Democrats last year made it very clear from the governor on down that equity was one of their top priorities and stopping the harm of arrests. But we also know, and speaking as somebody who works in multiple states across the country on this, when you legalize possession and you legalize personal cultivation, but you do not provide a legal way for people to acquire seeds and cuttings or a legal way for people to acquire finished product, all that happens is the illicit market expands and customers and consumers can't find reliable, tested product and know what's in it. So I'll dive into that a little bit more. See, there's one more question here about what improvements will help reduce some of the costs for patients. Well, One, we have some formulation improvements. Right now, we have certain ingredients that we're required to include, certain formats of cannabinoids that make it very difficult and costly to make certain products because we have to maintain a certain ratio of THCA, which once heated immediately becomes THC. It's the it's a, just another variant of THC. And so that is one step that we're really hoping will help us make more efficient and more effective products for patients. And then there are a few other things on the operational side, especially, you know, we still are required to have a pharmacist watch our plant disposal process, for example, which is supervised by multiple cameras already. And I think we could all agree that it's a better use of a pharmacist's time to be serving patients than to be watching a wood chopper run over plants.
I have one question. This is Sue Negeist. How many medical dispensaries are there in Virginia, and are there any in this area?
Yes. In the Charlottesville area, there is not one. I believe the closest one to Charlottesville might be Salem, which is not very close, and Richmond, which again, not very close. But G Leaf does delivery. I know that, and frequently does delivery up to the Charlottesville area because I have some friends who are patients up there who I know use that service. There are currently, I believe, 2, 4, 6, I believe there are 7 dispensaries open, 2 in the Central Virginia region, 2 in Southwest, 2 in Hampton Roads, and 1 in the Northern Virginia region. And I know there are more coming. Honestly, when this is going to be relevant to some of the adult use conversation, it's very difficult to find real estate that meets the many zoning requirements. And in particular, it's difficult sometimes to find a site that is far enough away from schools and daycares, depending on the region. All right. If there are no more questions on medical cannabis, I'm going to go ahead and dive right in on adult use. So let's just start with where we are today. So medical cannabis is fully legal and operational. It is legal to possess up to 1 ounce of cannabis on your person in public. It is legal to cultivate 4 plants in a secure locked location, not visible to the public, and tagged with, you know, your, I believe it's like your name and some personal information. Expungements were, the process to build towards automatic expungement is underway. Records have been sealed, but that's different from a complete and full expungement. And the boards and regulators have been established. So there is the Cannabis Control Authority, which will oversee everything about building the legal marketplace. There is the Cannabis Equity and Reinvestment Board, which is responsible for overseeing a fund, which is allotted to grants for social equity applicants and reinvestment into communities impacted by the war on drugs. And there's the Public Health Advisory Council, which I mentioned, and serve on, which will help oversee public health related regulations in the cannabis space. I think it's fair to say that what we have right now is a little bit confusing. What's not legal now, for example, is gifting schemes. And you might have seen advertisements for shops where you can come in and buy a t-shirt and receive an eighth of cannabis. And that is not legal. It's been made explicitly illegal in the bill. I was present at the committee hearings where we discussed this. It is legal if you are in a private residence to share your cannabis the same way you might share a bottle of wine or share a six-pack. However, which I think was an important element to include, especially having legalized personal cultivation. Now, let's talk about reenactment. And before I get into what into all of this, let me talk about what is reenactment. So last year, when they started discussing legalizing cannabis, they had, and we had helped write bills to support a study of JLARC, done by JLARC, the Joint Legislative and Audit Review Committee, as well as a work group within the administration that brought together all the relevant parts of the government that would be necessary to help regulate cannabis. And so with those two studies, we came into the 2020 session extremely well prepared. Or I'm sorry, the 2021 session, extremely well prepared to, frankly, far more prepared than many other states to really talk about the nitty-gritty of how to legalize cannabis. However, it takes a lot. This is a very complex policy issue, and it's not just cannabis policy. It's law enforcement and criminal justice policy. It's healthcare policy. It's economic development policy. It's youth and education policy, right? It hits so many different areas. It was a 400-page bill. And so there was a lot of stuff that legislators were able to reach some agreement on, but they wanted to have another year to come back to vote on before making it the law of the land. So there were portions of the bill that were enacted and in effect immediately, but there were other portions of the bill that were set up to have to be voted on a second time before they would be in effect in Virginia. One of the key elements of that was everything about setting up licensing and having a legal cannabis market to buy product from was delayed. So when licensing begins, when legal sales begin, what types of licenses and how many in each category, and the qualifications are all up in the air right now. In addition to that, there are different elements around some of the penalties for youth and for others, for other infractions that are still up for discussion, and a few other kind of finer points around hemp inclusion and some of those elements. So what are some of the open questions we have? And I hope, feel free to start submitting questions through the Q&A box or others. One, how to jumpstart legal sales through the medical operators. This came up multiple times in the Cannabis Oversight Commission. This came up multiple times in the Cannabis Oversight Commission, which was established by the law last year. And they have voted twice now to expedite legal sales through the medical operators because illicit market activity is booming. And I can tell you, I have heard of and seen products like pre-roll joints that were claimed, marketed as Delta 8, and were literally ground up paper sprayed with Delta 8 and being sold. And so there is a real consumer safety issue happening right now when you have illicit market activity that is expanding this rapidly and you don't have the regulatory capacity to help shut down and make sure that customers know and can discern the difference between legal product and illegal product and tested product and untested product. In addition, with this new leadership change and this balance of having a Republican House, a Republican governor, and a Democratic-controlled Senate, we're going to have one of the big open questions we have is how to make sure that everybody has the win that they need. So for the House GOP, it's how to make sure that this program will help benefit rural distressed farmers in their districts, especially for those from Southwest. And then especially for the Senate Dems who have a majority, but also important to Dems in the House, are some of these social equity priorities and making sure that we have a diverse and inclusive marketplace for cannabis. And lastly, and this was a big one that has come up, and at the Public Health Board, we've already received some briefings on the research and development going into these public education campaigns to help deter youth use. And again, educate consumers about responsible consumption, helping folks know and understand the difference between what's a legal dispensary and an illegal dispensary, what's legal product that's been tested and is safe to use versus untested and questionably safe. So these are a few of the big questions. All of those have lots of little details wrapped up in them. And so looking forward to hearing any questions you might have on that front. Before I open it up for Q&A, and I'll make sure to email these over, I just want to ensure beyond this conversation, you all have the tools to stay up to date on cannabis policy, if this is what you're interested in. Not just because I'm on the board, but Virginia Normal is one of the best clearinghouses for the nuts and bolts of cannabis policy in Virginia. The executive director, Jen Michelle Padini, hosts a weekly Facebook Live on Fridays at 4 p.m., and during session, each of those is an update on what's going on in the back and forth of the legislative session. And then they also mobilize folks through action alerts. And this is a great way to stay on top of staying in touch with your legislators about what's most important to you in terms of legalizing cannabis. And so with that, let me open it up for Q&A.
My wife just asked me a question. And sure. And I think I answered it, but probably not. Why is it illegal to do any advertising? Or at what point will it become legal to advertise? Maybe the better question.
Well, we hope soon. We were able this last year to improve a little bit of our options for advertising, but it's still pretty limited. And in particular, we're still not allowed to have billboards, which for me personally is entertaining because I have driven past a billboard with a cartoon cannabis leaf for a CBD shop, which is not how, definitely not how we would advertise anything at Columbia Care. So I'm hopeful that soon we'll see some changes to that particular setup, but it will depend on legislators making that choice.
I was going to say Sue Friedman again, and I've heard a number of questions before the program today. So if indeed I want to purchase cannabis/marijuana for recreational use, how do I do that?
I'm sorry, could you say that again? My computer broke up.
Yep. If I wanted to purchase marijuana for recreational use, how do we do that today with no...
you cannot legally purchase marijuana for recreational use today.
Okay.
There is... there might be places telling you that they sell different products, and I know that there are some CBD retailers who sell things like Delta 8 products. I will be... very honest here. I'm very, very careful. And I personally don't consume Delta 8 products because a lot of that falls into a very regulatory gray area. And it's been very easy. And I have seen and verified what are called certificates of analysis or the lab tests. And I have, because I work in this industry and I know how to ask these questions, I have followed up on certificates of analysis for what was claimed to be legally sold Delta 8 product, and been told by the lab that they did not issue that COA. And so I personally do not participate in a lot of CBD or Delta 8 consumption because it is so difficult as a consumer right now to verify the safety and the trusted vendors out there. So that's my personal choice. I think there are some folks, you know, like Columbia Care sells CBD products. There are some brands that I'm personally familiar with, and so I trust and use those. But otherwise, I'm very, very careful and recommend people be very selective.
Before I ask another question, there's a question in the chat box.
Oh, thanks. So the question is, how will the medical market prevent supply shortages if recreational sales rely on the processors for products? We have co-located adult use and medical sales in multiple states, and you can look at the menus. Illinois is a great example. We prioritize and are typically statutorily required to prioritize patient access first. So if you go to the Illinois Columbia Care website, you will see the patient side of the menu has far more products, many more options, and it retains those specialty formats like nasal sprays, which are used for emergency seizure relief, which are not particularly popular for adult use consumers, but are necessary for some of our patients. So that's, we not only prioritize patients in the supply, but also in the experience in our stores. In Massachusetts, where we also do co-located medical and adult use sales, there's frequently a line out the door. That line is adult use patients only, or adult use customers only. All of our patients come directly into the building. There's a waiting area, a seated waiting area, and they're prioritized at the cash registers as well. And those are all policies we're advocating for in the adult use program here in, or for the medical program right now and all of this legislation. There's a follow-up question asking if rec products will be less abundant and more expensive. First of all, just to clarify my terminology, I prefer not to use the term recreational because the research we have from states like California and Colorado, most of the so-called recreational customers who are coming in are actually coming in for a health or wellness reason, about 65 to 75%. And the top three reasons, again, being insomnia, anxiety, or pain. So that's why I talk about adult use versus medical. So in answer to the question, will adult use products be less abundant and more expensive? First of all, they will definitely be more expensive because they'll be subject to the cannabis excise tax. So adult use is almost always more expensive than medical because of taxation differences. And then in terms of less abundant, in the early stages of this market, Yes. In Illinois, for example, when the first day of sales happened, January 1, 2020, there were lines like blocks and blocks and blocks long waiting for cannabis. And stores had to put basket limits in order to be able to serve as many customers as possible. And, you know, we already know like illicit cannabis in Virginia is a $2 billion market. And that's based off of numbers that are a few years old. So it's probably a lot bigger than that by now, especially after the last year of this kind of uncertainty and gray market zone. So it will be a few years before the legal market can outcompete the illegal market in terms of supply and having all of the supply. But that's a question that's top of mind for legislators. And I think it's important when we think about this transition, that this is a transition and a shift, right? That we have an existing cannabis economy that is unregulated, untaxed, untracked, and has been around forever because cannabis never went anywhere, no matter what the laws said. And we're trying to transition $2 billion of economic activity into a legal market. So it's going to take time for us to do that. And the important part that we see is that the medical providers can be an important piece of that transition. And we can be a part of not just providing a legal pathway to sales and a legal way for people to acquire cannabis, but we can also start generating some of that tax revenue, which right now is slated to support substance abuse programs, public health education programs, and social equity and reinvestment. We expect to see some of those funding buckets change, you know, this year once there's some more negotiations. But the reality is cannabis tax revenue is going towards a lot of important things. And it's important that we start bringing in that revenue and that we start training and informing customers on how to access legal cannabis. There's another question. Is there a website with this information on it? Not the way that I've just relayed it to you, and I apologize. There are a lot of different websites, but this is a bit of a policy synthesis that you're getting for today. And I apologize. I wish there was a quick answer for that. But for folks who want to follow, again, I highly recommend Virginia Normal. There's also Marijuana Matters. Marijuana Moment is a popular trade publication, as well as MJ Biz Daily, which is another national resource for staying on top of cannabis policy.
A two-part question for you. How are doctors being informed about medical marijuana, and how they register, and who's training them? How are they getting their training?
So I believe the Board of Pharmacy requires them to register, and I believe requires a certain amount of continuing education. But the reality is, it's very difficult, and we have to do a lot of provider outreach on our own. And so we've been so focused on getting up and running in Virginia. We haven't been as aggressive yet here, but we do have presentations and speak regularly to providers who are curious about the program and trying to educate them about it. We find typically, once they talk to our pharmacist, which our Hampton Roads pharmacist, Ray Hernandez, is a true gem, and it does such an incredible expert on all things cannabis and pharmacy. They start to understand that there are, you know, for example, we provide hard pressed tablets so you can know how many milligrams have been consumed in a day. We provide, there are tinctures and other formats. A lot of times doctors think this is just joints, and it's actually not. There are lots of formats, and it depends on the patient's needs and conditions for which formats are the best for them. So we have a lot of education ahead of us for healthcare providers.
Thank you. My wife really appreciates knowing that. She's a retired PA.
Look, well, first of all, appreciate all of your service over your career. But yeah, it's breaking this down for medical folks, and I mean everywhere, right? There's a lot of stigma around cannabis. But, you know, the fastest growing consumer demographic is women over 55. In New York, our average patient is a 55-year-old woman who's sick. And I think folks really underestimate how much this is helping and providing relief to so many Americans right now. I see there's another question here. The illicit market In California, the illicit market is thriving as it undercuts the legal market and price due to high taxes on the legal side. Do you see this happening in Virginia? This is a national conversation for a lot of markets. The high taxes make it almost impossible to outcompete the illicit market. But sales continue to boom in a lot of states that have as well. So it's a weird kind of catch-22. I could see this happening in Virginia. I'm hopeful that we see some changes. You know, I think California is planning, Governor Newsom recently made a nod to reducing some of the cannabis taxes. Multiple localities have been looking at reducing their cannabis taxes. And so I hope we can see something similar in Virginia this year. I mean, to me, the ideal setup is a policy where you start the tax really low so that in the early stages, you can outcompete illicit prices. And then you have a schedule for increasing the tax over time so that you can still hit your revenue targets and fund your, you know, your state's priorities, but also make sure that you actually have a thriving market. Because the other element here is, and this is how I also cover California for Columbia Care. There are two really major dynamics happening there. And one is theft. There are targeted robberies, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area. Targeted robbery crews that are stealing, especially from social equity licensees in that area. And they are cleaning them out of all of their cash because cannabis businesses cannot access traditional banking. And so it's a very cash heavy business. And we all have a lot of cash on our premises, which is also why we all have a lot of security. But these robbery crews are stealing not only their cash, but also all of their product and then selling that product on the illicit market. And that is a double, you know, a double backstab, because not only have you just lost all of your inventory, but it also is about to get sold on the illicit market for cheaper than you can sell it because of all the taxes you'll have to pay for it. And so these folks are able to, the robbery crews are able to make quite a bit of revenue off of it. And it's been yielding a lot of struggle for folks. There are places that have been hit like four times, as many as four times in 3 months, and it's brutal. So I hope, I think in Virginia, we can start on a much better note in terms of both the security requirements, but also hopefully being in a better position to outcompete the illegal market.
There's another question on the VA on the question list.
Yes, the VA is not, they are not able to offer medical marijuana. I believe they have clarified some of their guidance so that folks can talk about medical cannabis with their providers more freely. I'm not sure that a VA doctor can write a certification yet because of the federal dynamic there. I will say this is something, and I strongly encourage folks to engage with, if you are involved in the VA system, to engage with your provider about medical cannabis. It's something that I think we had some hopes. The Biden administration had some strong policy proposals during their campaign about supporting medical cannabis and supporting broader cannabis research. And then earlier this last year, sent a federal employee to testify against a bill that would have funded veteran research on cannabis and veterans with PTSD. And so we have a long way to go on some aspects of federal cannabis normalization, especially under the current administration, which has been a little bit disappointing on this issue. I also see, thank you, Jen, for posting the virginiamarijuanacard.com has been following pretty closely and has a lot of good blog entries on just all things cannabis. And thanks, Jen, for also adding that doctors are required to talk to veterans but cannot recommend.
As a biologist, I have to ask this question. My view of Southwest Virginia tends more towards the coal mine and Scrabble, and not necessarily the best of riches of soil. How does this stack up against what's needed to have a thriving marijuana farm?
So there are a few things to tackle with that, which is, first of all, a lot of the cannabis that's being sold and consumed is being grown indoor or in greenhouse settings. It is actually very difficult to grow certain types of cannabis, or to grow cannabis for like flower consumption outside on the East Coast, because we are so humid. And I hear this from all types of hemp farmers and others. It's so humid. It's difficult to pass the microbial standards you need, because the more damp your growing environment is, the more likely it is that you'll have yeast or molds on your plant. And we have to have clean bud to sell to our patients right now, customers in a hypothetical future. So one, outdoor grow is very difficult. And then that's just in terms of the quality of product, which it can be done, to be clear. Like, you can grow very high quality outdoor grown cannabis. It's just difficult and is, of course, subject to the nature, the whims of nature, which I think we're all pretty aware of, been pretty capricious lately. The other element is security. So the difficulty with outdoor farms right now is we do not have the regulatory capacity to ensure to ensure anti-diversion efforts are being effective. And that means that it's entirely possible for somebody to have an outdoor grow and be selling product on the illicit market, or to be feeding products to unregulated sellers. And so it's, I think outdoor grow is included in the Virginia legalization bill under the parts that are subject to reenactment. And I'm sure we will see outdoor grow eventually, but it's unlikely we'll see outdoor grow in the first 1 or 2 years of a program, just because of the number of inspectors you need to enforce safety and security. And that's before you even get into the quality of the soil. I do not do the cultivation aspect, so I can't speak to that, but I'll speak to the other more policy-oriented aspects. I will say cannabis is, it's called weed for a reason. And while growing it to optimize THC content and bud structure takes a lot of skill, that plant wants to grow and survive, and it can. It's been found in a lot of places, and it has its origins in arid mountain areas like Afghanistan. But again, growing, being able to grow the plant versus growing a product that customers want to buy are two different things.
Nagist, Sue, with maybe the final question, unless we see some more percolate up, what would you hope for in this General Assembly?
Man, there's what I hope most of all is that we can actually pass some sort of legalization that does in fact meet all of those needs. Because I think the reality is we have a lot of Virginians who are hurting. We have a lot of folks who are impacted by prohibition of cannabis, and we have a lot of people who need access to the substance as medicine for the health and wellness. And they need safe access if they're consuming for recreational purposes. Just know that what you're consuming isn't also hurting you. And so I hope, and I think we can get there, that we can finish the job of legalization and design a marketplace that works for all Virginians. And I think not only can we get there, but if we did, it could be a real model for the rest of the country. Because if you're pro-legalization, you know, the low-hanging fruit is gone. The places that are going to be easy to legalize have done the job, and they're continuing to finish and enact that those policies, right? The places that still haven't legalized, it's going to be, despite the fact that this has overwhelming support across all demographics in America, it is a nonpartisan issue. Medical cannabis polls over 90% and is vastly more popular than any elected politician we have in office today. Adult use cannabis regularly is polling over 65% in multiple geographies. And again, with bipartisan majorities in both parties supporting this. So I hope that what we do in Virginia can provide a model for other states for how to not just legalize, but legalize in a way that really takes care of all of our constituents and all of our citizens.
There's one last question on the Q&A, and that's, how do I get affirmation from a non-VA doctor?
I will share with Sue some links. The Virginia Normal page has a great link for practitioners who will write you certifications. And so you can see a doctor who is specifically cleared, specifically does cannabis certifications to get that for you.
Thank you.
No more. I must thank you for this program. It was much more informative than I even thought it would be.
And, my pleasure. I could talk about this stuff for a long time.
Well, we may have to have you back, early in the next year when things have moved along. We've got an idea of what the General Assembly is up to. This is, we're of course interested in a number of the programs that are up before the General Assembly. And we're all sitting with, as probably you are too, with somewhat bated breath to find out what's going to transpire. So thank you so much for coming and speaking to us. And I look forward to talking to you at another time.
Same
and
here.
I'll turn it over to Sue. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like I said, I'll send along all the links I've got for Sue to circulate for interested folks.
Great. And we'll, I think we have the capacity to include links and additional information with the recording link that we send out to all those. So for those who have friends and associates who couldn't join us today, we will have a recorded program that you can share with anyone who's interested. And so again, I want to say thank you to Nageest and thank you to Peyton for bringing us a really thought-provoking and informative program. And also encourage everyone who's viewing, if you're not a Senior Statesman member, now is the time to join. It's a brand new year, year 26 of Senior Statesman, $20 for a household membership. You can be like Peyton. Peyton and Judy are both members of Senior Statesman for that $120 membership fee. So please go to the Senior Statesman of Virginia website and join us. So once again, thank you, Nageest, and everyone, look forward to those links and have a great afternoon. We'll see you next month for Senior Statesman, second Wednesday at 1:30 p.m.